you are living currently the life that I had thought I was going to live.
I think I was trying to make this before I got the vision. Muhammad Ali, Chevy Chase, Dennis Rodman. I had letters from everybody I was booking within 5 minutes. I'm on the ground. I grew up in New Jersey, and at 14, I started a multi-million-dollar baseball card company in 1984. You realize that you can look at all these photos all day long of the biggest stars in the world and the biggest events you've been to, but they don't mean anything, honey, because you don't mean anything to yourself. Don't get me wrong, but I could see some desperate look in your eyes. What's going on? I opened up to her. I told her everything. I just wanted my tombstone, real simple. A man that went deep through hell and came out of the other side and sprinkled hope and recovery across the world. That's it.
Welcome to the show, Darren.
Thanks for having me, man.
I'm so excited to have you here. I mean, we've been friends for years, and we've been right before we were trying to figure out how we originally met, but we couldn't put our finger on it. So it may come to us mid-show, but our paths, our worlds just collided in so many different ways over the years. And I'm really just such a huge fan of you and everything you stand for and all the value you're bringing to the world today through what you're doing with mental health and how you're educating people on the psychological effects and sides of all the different areas that we tend to keep private that mm-hmm. maybe we're a little embarrassed or uncomfortable talking about. And in your world as the known as the super agent, mm-hmm. you know, you've had such great exposure to some of the highest performers and the biggest names and been invited to some of the biggest events. So you've really had a front row seat to the impact of fame, fortune, success, and how it can change people, how mm-hmm. it can bring some people up and yep. create circumstances that hurt others.
Yep.
And, you know, as an entrepreneur yourself and all the business deals that you've been a part of, mm-hmm. You're just a wealth of knowledge and information. And I think for me and the audience, it's just it's going to be a more emotional
yep.
One-on-one today, but mm-hmm. I think it's going to be enabling and powerful for us to have that conversation and talk about some topics that we don't always touch, especially as we are high-strung entrepreneurs trying to, you know, put the doubts behind us, put the insecurities and the vulnerabilities away and just, What can we do next? And what does that lead to from potentially drugs and things that derail us and how we overcome them? So I'm excited to have you today.
Thanks, man. You just laid it out perfect. I'm excited. Let's get going.
Well, you know, I will share, and I think you know this, but you are living currently the life that I had thought I was going to live. You know, I went to law school to be a sports agent, had a job lined up with Lee Steinberg Sports Agency and David Meltzer, had a kid in law school and met the woman that's my wife now and became a dad, you know, overnight. And realized at the time, I saw this vision of myself knowing the agents I did know that they didn't have the relationships that I thought I wanted to have at the time. And it was like, uh-oh, I want to be a dad. I want to be a husband. I want to be home. And the world of being an agent, especially back pre-Zoom, pre-technology, mm-hmm. requires you to sacrifice your own personal relationships to enable and help your clients.
Yep.
And I mean, you've worked with some of the biggest names as we talked about, Magic, Bird, Hulk. I mean, Joe Montana, you name them, you've yeah. been involved. So I'm also excited to touch a little bit about that, you know, and how you went in and did you realize what was going to be required of you? And so my first question for you is, becoming the sports agent you became and the super agent that you are, did you realize when you started out what impact that was going to have on your personal relationships?
I had no idea. I grew up in New Jersey, and at 14, I started a multi-million-dollar baseball card company in 1984, and I sold it when I was 19. I dabbled in booking autograph signings for athletes and celebrities for about 5 years, and I think it was around 94, I got the vision. As I talk about my book in Aiming High, there was a big investigation from the FBI, and I was caught buying fraudulent Michael Jordan autographs from somebody.
Like knowingly or unknowingly?
Unknowingly. And it was one of those aha moments in life that I went from being, you know, this insecure, shy kid that was verbally teased all the time for having a learning disability. But then I found my calling with baseball cards. So now I was the hot shot and the one with the money and the success. And I lost everything. around like 24, 25 years old. And I had to start refunding money to keep my integrity, my credibility, my reputation intact. And Muhammad Ali, Chevy Chase, Dennis Rodman. I mean, I had letters from everybody I was booking autograph signings with, Magic Johnson and Lon Rosen, his longtime player rep at the time. And so I got off with probation. I think I had a felony charge. I still might have it. You know, that makes Jewish parents very happy.
Doctor, lawyer, felony
and
charge.
My dad, I took him away on a fly fishing trip. May he rest in peace in 95 to Alaska with the last $3,000 I had to my name. And he was so pissed I spent the money, but it was our favorite thing to do. And that trip changed my life because on the boat, we're with our tour guide. And he goes, so what's your next move, fellow? What do you think you're going to do? You're going to go back to the business? I said, Dad, you know what? There's so many haters there. When I was on top, everybody loved me. Now they're kicking me. I really think I could be an agent. I think I can do this, but I don't have 8 years to go to law school. He dropped his fishing pole, and he looks at me and goes, law school? Why do you need to think about being a lawyer? And I said, well, don't agents need to have a law degree? He goes, no. He goes, life is about who you know, not what you know. You can go to Berrien Springs, Michigan next week to Muhammad Ali's ranch. You can go to Mulholland Drive and see Tommy Lee and Pamela Anderson, which would be the biggest thing in the world. You can go to New Bedford, New York and see Chevy Chase, where he starts naming, you know, Magic and Beverly Hills. I would talk to Magic. He was there to support you during this rough time and tell him your vision. It was literally just a thought that I took an action on. And I was with Magic 3 weeks after that fishing trip in Michigan. He's always so hospitable. Have you been around him? Have you met him?
Yeah.
I know Dan loves him. So he's always that guy.
We were working on a deal together.
Yeah.
I think you actually helped me
with
that deal a little bit.
Yep. So we, whatever that was, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So we basically sat down and he asked me the same sort of question my dad asked. And he's like, what's your next move, man? What are you going to do? And I was so nervous, but I just built up the courage. I remembered it was one of those moments in life. I didn't want to think back. I didn't go for it. And I was like, you know, Irvin, I want to be an agent. I want to do the big stuff. I want to do the endorsements. I think I could do licensing deals, intellectual properties, commercials, keynote speeches. And he's like, well, you got to get a big first client. Who do you have in mind with that billion-dollar smile? And nervous kid like took over. And I was like, I'd like it to be you. And he put his arms on my shoulder, his hand on my shoulder. And he says to me, you know, I love you. And I know about making mistakes. This was a few years after his HIV announcement. But God tests great men and women. You have to remember that. God tests great men and women. And you have to remember that. And you went through this for a reason. I'm going to give you 2 years. But if you don't use me to knock down every single door to bring in all the big celebrities and athletes you can, I'm going to fire you before the 2 years is up, because it's not how successful I become in life. I'm going to become a success. Mind you, this is 30 years ago. In the world of sports that they've never seen for a retired athlete. It's how successful I make you and everybody else around me. It's a domino effect, and then you have to do the same thing.
Wow.
And, I mean, within weeks, I just started circulating all the clients I was booking signing events for, and it was Rodman, Chevy Chase, Pamela Anderson, Smoking Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali. And I mean, that was it. And I think within 3 to 4 months, we started running some ads in different publications, in the Robb Report and Affluent Lifestyle magazines. I hired a publicist, knew nothing about PR, as this insecure kid that thought I was the greatest thing in the world because I had all these clients, but I wasn't really churning a ton of deals yet. New York Post Page 6, which was the TMZ before TMZ. They picked up a story that super agent Darren Prince signed Magic Johnson as a client. And I ran right over to my dad's house to show him the New York Post. He sat down at a table like this in his basement. He goes, sit. He goes, come here, sit down for a second. Let me tell you something. They're not calling you that because you're anybody special. Remember that. Keep your ego in check. Magic's the one that's special.
That's sage advice. Mm. How did you process that?
I didn't.
Did you roll your eyes?
No, most people don't know unless you see me on the beach or a swimming pool somewhere, but I actually got, and it's a reminder of what my mindset was back then. I have a Superman tattoo that says agent in the middle of my leg that I got at 25 years old, because I thought, again, my main purpose of being here is talking about those underlying roots of insecurity, brokenness, self-esteem, always looking for that external validation without having that inner peace and that inner self-love. And obviously, it took me good amount of years until I had my moment of change.
Sure. And fast forward a little bit from that moment. Right? You're 24, 25. You just land Magic Johnson.
Yep.
And within months, you're landing all the big names.
Yep.
You are the super agent.
Yep.
Success can go to a lot of people's heads, especially when it comes too fast.
Yep.
And I know a little bit about your story, but for the audience, at what point did you start to have those spiraling side effects of the immediacy of success and some of that fame and attention and being the who's who and the super agent? Like, at what point did those distractions, those demons that start to creep in, how did they start to impact you? And when did you really start to let them in before it became something serious?
So I think I often talk about this when I speak and I do interviews. I think it probably the first 4 or 5 years, man, as an agent, I really was a rock star. And I have to be very careful when I speak to high school and college kids, because then they can look and be like, hey, life didn't work out bad for Darren. Look at the way that he lived. But at a certain point, it turned. And what was once living to use turned out to using to live. No, I wasn't doing illegal drugs anymore. I was taking opiates.
Sorry, you said killers. Living to use?
I say what at one point what was living to use turned out to using to live.
Okay.
And I don't know when it turned. It was probably within that 4 or 5 year window. And I remember specifically, I was with Smoke and Joe Frazier in Dallas at a corporate event. And, you know, he didn't know, none of the clients knew. And I'm in the room, here I am on top of the world. People just think I got it all together, multi-million-dollar company. And my first thought before I went downstairs with him was I chopped up 3 Oxycontins and I snorted them and I'm getting ready to go down and be me. And it was the first time my superpowers weren't there. I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was a tolerance. I don't know if they weren't effective anymore. I don't know if I needed to start taking more and more. That feeling that I was chasing at that point, I started at 14, dabbling and experimenting with drugs, eventually turned on me. And then I, from then on, started taking and using to not get what we call dope sick, where I didn't go into a state of shock or detox. Because my ego was too big to go to rehab. I didn't need it. Look at my career. Look at everything that I built. Look at everybody I'm surrounded by. And the people in my life, too, are all thinking the same thing. There was only a handful of them that know how bad it got towards the end. And, you know, I had an overdose. I was at All-Star Weekend, 2007 NBA All-Star Weekend. I think it was in Vegas. And Dennis Rodman, we just did a big TV show deal, Geek to Freak, with Mark Cuban, HDNet. Network, and he had a gentleman's club party at Scores, I think, that night, a launch event. Had a terrible case of bronchitis, and I called the doctor that afternoon to the room. They called in some antibiotics, Vicodins, and cough syrup, prescription-based cough syrup, opiate-based cough syrup called Tussionex. If anybody's listening and knows about it, and I mean, it just takes you, somebody like me takes you to the moon. And I came back from the pharmacy. I called my wife, my then wife, from the lobby. I said, order me 3 vodka, Red Bull, and cranberries. I'm going to get ready to go out. And came up to the room, probably snorted 5 or 6 Vicodins, and took a couple of the drinks and half the bottle of cough syrup, man. And within 5 minutes, I'm on the ground. My eyes felt like they were rolling by my head. My breathing was getting slower and slower. I was foaming at the mouth. My then wife panicked, clearly called the paramedics to the room. They put an oxygen mask on my machine right away, a needle in this arm, needle in that arm, EKG machine. All I'm doing is looking up at the sky saying, don't take me. I don't know what the hell I just did. What the heck did I just do? God, I'll never do this again. And clearly, at a night like that, you don't make it out that night.
Yeah.
So went to bed, woke up at 4 in the morning, and I looked at myself in the mirror to go to the bathroom. I was like, you sick bastard. Like, what the heck is wrong with you? You got this amazing life, and you do this. And with that, Jeff, my best thinking, I chopped up 5 more Vicodins. I snorted them, and I finished the rest of the cough syrup, and I went back into bed because
after the
I
hospital?
Thought it was the vodka, Red Bull, and cranberry that triggered the overdose, the combination of the 3. And when they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, that was it in that moment.
Wait, I'm sorry. You got home from the hospital and then chopped up in
the line? Paramedics left my hotel suite. I mean, they literally had a dozen paramedics in my room. 4 hours later, when I woke up, I snorted another 5 Vicodins and finished half the Tustin X after I had what I thought was a moment to myself, staring at the mirror saying, what's wrong with you? Because it was the vodka, Red Bull, and cranberry in my mind that caused the reaction.
Not the drugs.
No, not the drugs. You can't tell somebody in that mindset any different. And, you know, I had a moment of clarity that next week. If you want me to keep going,
please.
Any more questions?
No.
Okay.
I want to hear the rest. You have me at the edge of my seat.
I finally had a moment of clarity. I called an addiction psychiatrist, but I wasn't honest with him. And I told him what was going on in my life. He goes, you're an opiate addict. I could put you on a detox drug called Suboxone. But you got to come in once a week. I can't call it over the phone. It's a handwritten prescription. So I started that, but he didn't know I was still, you know, drinking a couple days a week. I'm on mood stabilizers, antidepressants. I'm taking Xanax and Valium to calm my nerves. It's just a complete shell of myself. And I lived that way for about a year and a half.
Just with the
Suboxone, which you're not supposed to take that long. It's typically meant for 2 to 3 weeks because it's just as addictive as the real painkillers. And I had my come to God moment on July 1st of 2008. My uncle, may he rest in peace, he recently passed, and his then girlfriend Andrea visited my mom in New Jersey where I was living. I grew up there my whole life till I moved to LA and got smart 6 years ago. And she never met me before. This woman I never met comes into my condo and says, are you okay? And I just felt something different with her. And I was like, no. She goes, I never met you, but I could just see sort of, don't get me wrong, but I could see some desperate look in your eyes. What's going on? I opened up to her. I told her everything. And she goes, do you realize your life has become powerless and unmanageable? I said, yeah. And she goes, do you realize that you can look at all these photos all day long of the biggest stars in the world and the biggest events you've been to, but they don't mean anything, honey, because you don't mean anything to yourself.
As an entrepreneur, I know how meaningful it is to invest in the people and causes that are close to me. And on GoFundMe, it's easy, safe, and powerful to do just that. Whether you're supporting a family member, friend, local business, or charity. And whenever you make a donation, you're protected by the GoFundMe Giving Guarantee. Visit GoFundMe.com today to help make a positive difference in your community.
And that broke my soul and I started to cry. And I go, what could I do? What could I do in a state of desperation? She goes, I could help you. She goes into her pocket. She pulls out a 5-year sober coin. She goes, you don't know this, but I just celebrated 5 years sober. If you do everything I tell you to do, you could be a walking miracle and get a life beyond your wildest dreams. And I said, I'm desperate. I'll do whatever it takes. And 36 hours later, I was detoxing. I was in New York City at the Carillon Building in New York City. Came back from the gym, vomiting, upset stomach, everything that goes along with that disaster of detoxing when you're a drug addict. And I called them up and screamed. I said, I can't freaking do this. I'm calling the goddamn doctor. I don't care. I need to get my pills. And they both started screaming on the other side. My uncle's like, you've been living this goddamn way for 14, since you were 14. It's time you get yourself to a 12-step meeting. There's a million of them in New York City. Tell these people you're sick and suffering. Get rid of that effing freaking ego that you got already, or you're going to be buried 6 feet under. I said, I can't do it. I've done those stupid meetings before. I got in some legal trouble in my early 20s with possession charges. Not to distribute. I was the one with money, so I would give drugs to all my friends.
Right.
And, you know, a Jewish thing to do. It's very popular, especially in Essex County, New Jersey. So I hung up the phone, and it was almost like, screw you two. When I ran into the bathroom, locked myself in, and now Simone, my then wife, is panicking because she just dealt with an overdose, you know, almost a year prior. She didn't want to see anything bad happen again. And I'm going through all the medicine cabinets trying to find some non-narcotic anxiety pills, which she allowed me to take. By all rights, I should have been in a rehab, but I was doing a cold turkey. And out came 2 extra strength Vicodins of one of the bottles, which was shocking because Simone and I spent literally 2 hours the night before when we got home from New Jersey to our place in New York, going through all the medicine cabinets and throwing out all the opiates. So I thought for a split second this was a gift from God. Yeah, I mean, I thought that was my spiritual awakening, just what I needed. When I thought I was done, I'm not done. I got 2 more. And the moment happened, man, because I fell to my knees, and I never had a moment since never had one before. And I shouted out to God, take the money, take the business, take the notoriety. I need a single freaking day of freedom. I need to feel like I did as a little kid. And if you could take me out of hell, God, I promise I will spend one day at a time the rest of my life helping take others out with me. And it was a lightning bolt that went through my entire body. I felt it on my right side. You know now that I'm deaf on my left. And in this good ear, as loud as can be, I heard a voice, I've got you and you're ready. And on the ground, broken, shaking, trembling, crying, sweating, I stood up. And this hand opened up and it flushed the last of the Vicodins. And I walked out of that bathroom. I went right to a computer and I Google 12-step meetings, recovery meetings, and I found one on this Sunday night, July 2nd, 2008, in the upper 80s in a church basement. I jumped into a cab. It was this gorgeous night, and all I remember thinking on that way over is looking up at the sky saying, oh, my God, what the heck just happened? For the first time in my life, I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to get high, and I walked into this church basement. There must have been upwards of 200 addicts and alcoholics who were all once of a hopeless state of mind. And just as I walked in, I heard the leader say, anybody new coming back are really sick and suffering that needs our help. And I believe it was the hand of God, because this big time super agent was nothing but a fucking fraud. And I literally said, I'm sick, I'm suffering, I'm suicidal, I need your guys' help. And what I thought was the worst day of my life now turned out to be my very best, because opening up and being vulnerable in that moment allowed a dozen spiritual brothers and sisters come right over to me and tell me things I never heard before, like stick with the winners, keep coming. Don't worry about if you don't get the fellowship. You keep showing up, God, and the fellowship is going to get you. And the one that really got me more than anything was, keep showing up. We're going to love you before you ever learn how to love yourself. So one day became a week became a month. I became obsessed with going to meetings, reprogramming my brain, going back to my thought process. Whatever traumas, trials, and tribulations I went to, I started doing the 12-step work. For anybody listening, the 12 steps are phenomenal for everybody in life, not just people suffering with drug and alcohol issues. The step one is the only one that mentions the word alcohol. Everything else are steps for living a better spiritual life. And once I got to a year sober, I realized my sponsor then called me and said, you're feeling good? I said, yeah, because you're feeling great. I said, yeah, because you're a freaking walking miracle, because you had an ego the size of New Jersey when I met you. You're the type of people we find dead because you got all the money and the resources. He goes, let me ask you something. You're being a little bit selfish. And I said, so what do you mean? I said, I'm doing everything I got to do for me. He goes, right, let me stop you right there. You're doing it for you. Mm-hmm. You want to keep this gift? He goes, you son of a bitch. You got a platform that's bigger than anybody I've known. You start giving this gift away to other people.
That moment. And how did you internalize that?
I just felt like it took me to a whole nother level of clarity, understanding, like, wow, like maybe the agent life wasn't what my calling was. Maybe God did choose me when I was ready, vulnerable, accountable, to surrender, that you're going to have a platform because of all the media outlets, all the biggest stories you've ever met, all the big talk shows. Back then, there was no podcast.
Right.
And now, but now look, I'm here. And to share a gift with the world. And I just realized then that was it. I went on Facebook, started, you know, by the grace of God, I'm celebrating 1 year sober. My mom was embarrassed. It was tough for her.
Sure.
You know, being a suburbia Jewish mom from Essex County.
Of course.
My dad was so proud. My dad always knew that there was something much bigger. And I would just love getting DMs from people, like inboxes. There were some people that are very open, even on Facebook. Hey, man, you know, I'm inspired by your post. Can you call me? And, you know, got to 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, doing the same thing every day, very structured, the same way I'm in business. And look, it doesn't mean there's not challenges in life. You just learn how to deal with life without, mm-hmm. you know, going backwards and relapsing. I still have thoughts. You know, I'm a drug addict. I'm always going to have thoughts, but I don't act upon it. And then I got through, you know, some bad stuff, man, in recovery. I lost Smokin' Joe. We lost Muhammad Ali. It was Ali's birthday yesterday. Joe would have been 80 on January 12th. they weren't just clients, they were family. I got to go to their funerals though, man, sober.
Yeah. But you lost them because of
I lost them in recovery.
Yeah.
Joe got to experience me a lot more in sobriety than Ali did, because Ali's health started, you know, really deteriorating. Yeah. So the last few times I saw him, I don't really think he recognized me. But Joe was, you know, was there. And the worst one was I landed here on Friday, January 13th of 2017 on a 6 p.m. flight. I was going to meet Rodman and one of my dear friends, Nikki Cardasco, and Dennis Rahman at Joe Manganiello's birthday party. And I got a panicking message from my uncle to call him right away that my dad suffered aorta aneurysm. Perfect health. I was with him 3 days before, 81 years old, my parents' 52nd wedding anniversary, and that I need to get on the plane right away, that he might not make it through the night. I was just shocked. The first thing I do, I run right to the LAX United Lounge and called my sponsor, and he says to me, "You've got a foundation after 8.5 years that I haven't seen with people at 30. So when I've told you all those years that when life is bad, get yourself to a meeting and work with others, I told you even more importantly, when life is good, get yourself to meetings and work with others."
Mm-hmm.
Because look at it as a spiritual bank. You're now going to withdraw upon it. And you know, I got to spend the last 32 days with my dad, and he, you know, he wasn't aware of it the first couple of weeks. He came out of the coma, but I believe all the service work I did leading up to that, God gave me the most incredible gift to wake him up. And that last week he was somewhat coherent, and I got to see him the night before he passed. It was on Valentine's Day, February 14th, by myself. It was Hulk Hogan that told me to go. I was in touch with him and Magic and all the clients. And like I said, they're family more than clients. Yeah. And Hulk's like, "Brother, you know what you need to do? Not with your mom, not with your sister." I was engaged at the time. He goes, "Not with your fiance. I know how special of the relationship you had with him. And just like when I lost my dad, I got to go see him alone. And you're going to regret it if you don't. And you are his pride and joy." And I'd say, "You know what, great idea." And I went there, wasn't even emotional. I felt as comfortable as can be to just see him at peace. They were putting him into hospice the next day. And I held his hand and I said, "When you see Joe, Muhammad, and Grandma, you know, let them know how, you know, well I'm doing down here." I said, "But Dad, the craziest thing from this whole experience, for 32 days, going through the most uncomfortable part of my recovery journey, never feeling so comfortable for somebody like me, is mind-blowing. So I want to be able to let people know that you can get through the worst stuff in life." I said, "I don't know how I'm going to do it, but from above, you're going to see your touch the world that's never been done before to the level that I'm going to do it." And a couple of weeks later, just again, God moment, I met a publisher that was in recovery, and she's like, "Your story is fantastic. We'd love to publish your memoir." And I said, "I can't just do it about the celebrities. I know that's what people want. My dad always wanted that." And she goes, no, I'm not saying that at all. "I think your story from the hell of addiction to the beauty of recovery and that inner self-work that you do, why people are a fly on the wall to some of the biggest cultural icons of all time, that will impact lives and be your legacy." And I was like, "That's it."
Yeah.
And then Aiming High came out, became a bestseller in four countries.
I mean, you gave me a signed copy. I can't wait to devour it because I think you're right. I mean, we so often, especially in today's world with social media, we see highlight reels. We see what people will share, but what we don't see are the demons and the struggles that people go through, regardless of a perception of success.
Yep.
And I know for people who are earlier on the ladder or struggling financially or with their business, they see, or trying to break into the industry, sports industry agents,
yep,
you know, you're living a life that they would dream of having.
Yep.
But there's a cost to everything.
Yep.
And they don't get visibility to that side of you unless you share it.
Yep.
And most people aren't willing to be that vulnerable.
Yep.
Aren't willing to open up and express and share their demons, their insecurities, their major mountains, their worst days.
Yep.
And I mean, one of my favorite things about you is you're literally an open book. I mean, here we are talking and you're sharing with our entire audience your most embarrassing, potentially most darkest, deepest demons that you've had to deal with and overcome.
Yep.
And I think it will enable more people to realize that we all struggle.
Yep.
But how do you persevere through that and not have to lean on crutches like drugs or alcohol or violence or you name it?
Whatever it might be, depression.
Yes.
You know, suicide thoughts, you know, people that actually take an action to it. You know, I think it's become a God-given superpower to be so comfortable talking about the uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't look at it as embarrassed. And I know a lot of people have. And I'll tell you a quick story. When Amy High came out, Chris Cuomo was the first talk show I did, prime time. And he called me. His producers usually do the prequels. And I know him from, you know, some clients over the years. And we had a 2-hour phone call conversation about this opioid crisis. And he's like, please let me be your first interview. I know you have a lot of platforms. I'm going to take this global for you. And he goes, look, there's not a family out there that doesn't know a friend or a loved one that's not suffering from this opioid crisis. And so I did his first. And my mom was so nervous because, oh, my God, he's going on the global stage with this. That next day, she calls me. It was probably early afternoon. I did Rosanna Scotto, Good Morning, Good Day New York. And that next afternoon, she calls me to say how good I did on the interview and how proud she was. But you know, maybe I should dial it back a little bit and just don't overdo it. She calls me. Literally, it was like within 5 minutes. You're not going to believe this. My friend so-and-so I went to high school with, remember, she's got the son that's a mega sexual attorney, big partner at that firm in Miami. Guy makes millions and millions of dollars. She just told me his family's ready to kick him out. He just got out of his third drug rehab and he left early. And she doesn't know why he can't get it. And she was blown away.
To see him. Yeah. I mean,
I had a call with that guy, I'm not going to mention his name, for about an hour and a half that night. And he's still sober.
That's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, the impact.
It's the greatest thing in the world for me.
I mean, the impact you can have with that platform. And I think it's true. I mean, you're very spiritual now.
Very.
Were you growing up?
No, I was raised Jewish. We'd go to temple. You know, I didn't love it. I picked up certain messages here and there. But I told my mom and dad when my dad was alive, because mom was getting upset I wasn't going to temple for Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah. I was like, you know, mom, I feel that people that are too religious, just religious in general, it's nothing against them, it's everybody's beliefs, are afraid of going to hell. I'm now spiritual because spirituality are for those who have been there.
Whoa. I'm processing what you just said because I've never heard it articulated like that.
A lot of people haven't.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of quotes, things that have come to me too. And these, I call them GMCs, like I talked about on Jay Shetty and other interviews, these God-managed coincidences. My brain just sometimes, it's the laws of attraction. It's things that just come to me. Like Hulk told me a few weeks ago when I saw him, he's like, you know, brother, God is just working through you. You know, any calls I have now with him, Magic, Charlie Sheen, it's about life. It's the most incredible thing, man. Like maybe 1-2% of the conversations about business, that's easy.
Yeah, it is.
It's just that I can actually help them on a bad day. I can help them with their thought process.
Without betraying trust, how was it working with Charlie Sheen sober over the last decade? When he was going through the, you know.
So Charlie, I actually started working with, it hasn't been 10 years, me and my boy Nikki, we started with him, I would say probably 8 years ago. And the first year, you know, he was doing his thing. And I am not taking credit for this because I've had a lot of media people ask me. He has been sober for, I think he just celebrated either 7 or 7.5 years sober.
I didn't know that.
And he had...
Wow.
He had his moment. Yeah, well, he's got a new TV series that just came out on HBO Max that Chuck Lorre, out of all people,
I saw
producer,
that. Yeah.
They made amends. Charlie talked about his recovery journey, which I was very proud of him in a lot of his interviews. Because, you know, like, I guess when you're on that type of stage, you know, it depends what you do with them. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. has been open. Mm-hmm. Elton John's obviously been very open. Anthony Hopkins, who else? Danny Trejo has got like 53 years. Some of them are a little bit hesitant. They could still think, oh, I might lose work. I might be a liability. You know, I don't really want to talk about it. You still got your ego. But I just love the fact that he did it himself. He just was missing stuff with his kids and just had this come to God moment that was just like, I don't be that guy anymore. And he's incredible.
In the absence of spirituality, do you think you would have been able to get to the point of overcoming the addiction? And I know it might not be an easy question or a place that you can even answer because you have such a strong connection spiritually, but how essential is that in the progression towards sobriety for someone who's dealing with it? Because I know I have friends that are dealing with addictions.
Yep.
That are not spiritual at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm asking it more because I'm curious from someone who has walked and been in hell, as you say it, is spirituality a requirement to get there? Or is there a path for those and someone struggling who just doesn't connect with what the words you're saying on a spiritual level?
Yep. I think anybody you speak to at my level that's been doing it 15 and a half years now is going to tell you there has to be. Or there has to be some connection to a higher power greater than yourselves that restored you to sanity. And if you don't have that, you're going to live a very dry, sober life. So you're going to have every one of the character defects. You're still going to be acting out. You're going to be so uncomfortable in your own skin. And I have so many spiritual nuggets that I use that I've picked up along the way where in the heat of an argument, I'd rather feel all right down now than right.
I'd rather feel all right than right
mm-hmm. in a heathen argument. Because I know if I engage in that ego and that mouth or that text message or email gets sent, I'm going to regret it. I'm going to have an emotional hangover. And I'd rather the other person just to be like, look, I'm not a doormat. If there's a situation that obviously I need to, you know, step up, it happens, but it's few and far between. Because I'm going to have an emotional hangover. I don't want that. It's worse than any drug or alcohol hangover. And I don't, it could last for days. It could last for weeks. I try to understand people instead of me being understood. Mm-hmm. I've gotten that from spirituality. And the favorite one, I've got in neon lights in my bedroom is, remember this the next time there's might be, I've always seen the calm version of you. Say what you mean what you say, and don't say it mean. Will change your life.
Mean what you say what you mean.
And don't say it mean.
And don't say it mean.
Because energetically, when we all open up our big fat mouths and send that dumb text, your day's done. Your day's off. You're not going to manifest anything, period. You know, all you're going to bring on is the bad energy and the laws of attraction won't be there. You're not using good positive words of affirmation. It's real, mm-hmm. you know? I mean,
I think that's so powerful because I have this personal goal. And I say goal because I don't always achieve it. To never make a decision when I'm super upset or super happy.
Yep.
When too much emotion and there's too much emotionally charged behavior behind your thinking,
yep.
you may not like the decision you're making. You're not exactly. coming at it from a place of clarity. And I know your saying is more on the negative side of upset.
Yep.
But I think it also applies on the positive side when you're super exuberantly happy and you're like on cloud nine, you may make a decision then that might not be what is best for you in the long run.
Yep.
So I love that saying and how you said it, don't say it mean, that last little bit.
I'll text it to you because you're not going to forget it. I was with Jerry West. He's a dear friend, client, more like a second father figure. We flew to Houston about a week and a half ago. And, you know, he's openly suffers with mental health and, you know, suicidal depression. He's very open about it. And we just got into a whole kind of deep talk about some of my sayings on the plane. And, you know, he's just so proud because he goes, I'm around the richest people in the world too. Because like, I wish everybody could be like Steve Ballmer. He's a sweetheart. He's got more money than every NBA winner put together. But I was like, I call him JW. When he met my spiritual healer, I told you about that was at Rudy's event last week, Landry, who's incredible. He's, in my opinion, he's taken Joe DiCenzo's work and taken it to a new level for the modern age. And we all got stuff, man. Nobody is off limits. I've been around the biggest people in the world that I just read right through them now. And if you want to, you know, keep posting those private jets and those Rolls Royces and those mansions, no, What I want to see is you impress me and say you just made a fat donation to a charity that changed people's lives, that took people out of an area, rather than showing off your entrepreneurship skills, because anybody can do that. You know, I want to see more giving back posts like my boy Vic Tipness does, how he fed hundreds of people in Colombia, like Dan Fleischman does, and, you know, the toy drives. Like, that's what we need to see more of.
That's right.
You know, the flash is the flash, and it ultimately will not make you happy. No matter what anybody tells you, I've said on every podcast, I like what Dave Meltzer said, gives money gives you the ability to shop, it gives you the ability to buy things, but that's where it draws the line. You could still have health issues, still have psychological problems, you can have relationship issues, problems with your kids, problems with your employees. It just gives you the ability to really take care of people. That's what financial wealth has given me. I love taking care of people. But again, I said this on Jay, and it gets me emotional every time. Bro, if I lost the business tomorrow and I had to move to a studio apartment, you'd be sitting in front of the real ass Darren Prince, just like you are right now. And I would look back and say, God, thank you for the 35, 40 year run that we had and the people and the experiences. I might come work here at Everbowl in the marketing department or speak around the country. I know I got other abilities to bounce back and come back, because when you do it in life, forget it.
And having had a front row seat over the last few years, getting to work and speak and get to know so many bigger names, higher profile individuals, celebrities, athletes, speakers, just the people that have that bigger presence, I think what you're hitting on is so apropos, because there are people who are who they are in the public light when you're privately with them.
Yep.
And there's a tranche of them that are not.
Yep.
And I like how you said that, because the names that you mentioned that are giving back and are not so important about showing either wealth that they do or don't have and trying to impress for the sanctity of clicks, likes, and followers, but are actually making the impact and are who they are offline.
Yep.
Those humans are changing lives.
Yep.
And it's a small circle. And we all, like we were saying, you know, we have so many common friends. The ones who are real are not only making an impact, but those are the people that we should all be looking up to.
100%.
And it shouldn't be, you know, posting a picture in front of a Ferrari.
Yep.
Why is that impressive?
Yep.
I don't quite understand it. And I know for a lot of people who are young
society, people trying to scale and grow, it motivates them. And I get it to a degree. But I think there should be a better blend, a better thought process, you know? So like David Goggins is my guy. You know, we've been together for a couple of years, and him and his wife really don't work with nobody. And he says it all the time. He goes, man, you get me. He goes, because he ain't about the money. He doesn't give a crap. He goes on these huge stages. Dan's been there and he calls out everybody else on the stage. It's not him. He's the funnels. And then he doesn't care. It's who he is. And, you know, he goes, the problem with those funnels, man, and the people selling, I get it, like, to each their own, but you're not there to follow up, hold their hand, grind it out. Like, I'm saying stuff in that fucking moment that's going to, you're going to take this shit home with you. You know, that's why he talks in real life. And he told me from the day we met, I love any motherfucker that goes to war with themselves every day. And that's what you do. And I just think that's so powerful, because we're in a society where people just see something on Instagram, your whole day can get ruined. A friend posts something. I just got out of a relationship with a young girlfriend that was 27 years younger than me. And it was one of the biggest issues that, you know, her and all her friends, their entire day was about getting, you know, a certain amount of likes, dressing a certain way, wanting to look up to the wrong people. And I just, like, I do too much self-work to be part of that generation. You know, I love her. She was very near and dear to me, but it's just, we had a big disconnect over it, because social media is good when it's used for the right vehicle and that's the right avenue. But it's scary now having kids, because they could buy prepaid phones. You think you're taking their phone away. If they could buy a prepaid phone for $15-$20 and still be checking everything out that you thought you took the phone away that they shouldn't be looking at.
And I'll say, you know, I have my 18-year-old daughter, she gives me a hard time a lot, because I don't dress in designer clothing, really. I don't drive fancy cars. And in a way, she didn't say it explicitly, but the insinuation was, Dad, you've made too much money to drive these cars and dress like that. You're embarrassing. Like, why don't you? And I'm trying to explain to her, my goal, and maybe it's the upbringing, but I tried to explain to her, like, creating financial wealth gives you options.
Yep.
And I'm proud of the work me and my team have done. I'm proud of what we do and how we do it. But I'm not, it doesn't change my life to have a Ferrari or not have a Ferrari, whether I can afford a Ferrari or can't afford a Ferrari. Like, what I want to be able to do is create freedom, opportunities. I want to build and buy assets so I can help my entire lineage have generational opportunities.
Of course.
And as a dad, my goal, and I feel like any parent's goal, shouldn't be to have all the coolest things to have them, but to create a set of circumstances where if my child was meant to paint caricatures and that was what she was meant to do in this world, and that was what drives her and makes her the happiest human being alive.
The greatest thing you could ever ask for.
I want her to live within her purpose and passion and not have to worry about paying a mortgage, a rent check, put food on the table.
Yep.
Because I think too often in society, we have to conform our choices to necessity. Yep. And as a dad, if I can create an abundance of wealth that can be passed to my kids and grandkids so they can chase purpose.
Exactly.
And live and love their entirety of their life to where they don't need addictions and they don't need the other things that are going to crawl in.
Yep.
Then I've done my job.
That's it.
And I'd rather do that than have a Ferrari.
100%.
And I hope that my daughter and that age group starts to learn
to understand that.
That the wealth that you see on social media, it's cool the moment you buy it. But anyone who has Ferraris, private planes,
you're over it after a couple of days.
And they all get to a point where they don't want it anymore.
Yep.
All of them.
And then you have maintenance issues with your private jets.
Of course.
Becomes a headache.
We have billionaire friends.
Yep.
They don't have private planes.
Yep.
Anymore. Some of them do.
Yep.
Because of necessity. But some of them say the same thing. It was like, it was cool the moment I bought it.
Yep.
And then you have this group of people that want to impress. Yep. And I think that that is another form of addiction that is very dangerous.
100% self-validation and instant gratification.
Yeah.
It's a major, major issue for a lot of people. If you look at most of my posting on Instagram, man, occasionally if it's a client's birthday, I'll do stuff from Dan's event or a commercial shoot or something, but 75-80% of my posts are videos like we're having now or speaking engagements or quotes, because there's nothing that lights me up better in the morning when I wake up or in the middle of the night and there's a DM from somebody in Australia or something saying, hey mate, you know, I read your book, I saw your interview on Bradley or Jay Shetty or Jordan Haberger and it changed my life. Do you ever have any time to speak? My office knows. They have a whole separate schedule when it comes to recovery stuff. I'm my own foundation, Naming High Foundation. I did a big event at Komodo in early December at Grutman Spot and raised a bunch of money. And I mean, the next day I got a call from somebody that needed scholarshiping. I scholarshiped a girl after speaking. I think I told you when we were in Texas, I spoke in Orlando to 4,500 people at the Faith Over Fear Business Summit. They raised over $60,000 for my charity. I take nothing. Paid my own flight, hotel, all goes to scholarship people. The next morning, I got a call from a woman and her 16-year-old daughter just had her second overdose on fentanyl. It was in the hospital. And I said, does she want help? She goes, yeah, she definitely wants help. I was like, when she gets out, you got to have her call me. And she goes, okay, we'll call you together. I go, no. I go, you got to listen to me. I said, I don't listen to anybody's husband, wife, mother, father, sister, brother. She wants this gift. She's going to show me that she wants to get it herself. Here's my number.
Yeah.
I'm not wasting my time because somebody else wants it more. You know, I know we destroy everybody else around us. We just don't kill ourselves. We kill our entire community of friends, family members, coworkers, and colleagues. So that's always been a rule. Somebody needs that help, you're going to reach out to me directly and I will drop everything and make sure I'm going to get right back to you. And I got this girl on the phone a couple of days later and I could tell the magic happened because, you know, I told her, I said, look, I'm going to send you some interviews. You know, Jay's obviously somebody the young culture likes. And she goes, yeah, and I'll watch it. I sent her my hour. I said, look, just get back in touch with me. And bro, it was 2 hours later. She texted me and she goes, I couldn't stop watching the interview. She goes, I would love to take advantage of your gift and go to a treatment center. And it was probably around early November. We work out of my place. I live in a big high rise. And so we're at a table like this, me and my girls in the office and my boy LJ, and the mail comes and it's handwritten card. And I open it up with like a high school type notebook paper with the handwritten letter inside the card. It's from this 16-year-old and her mom. And she's like, I cannot thank you enough that I just celebrated 60 days sober. And I'm trying to help my friends through this and dealing with insecurities and bullying and why I went down this path and how to never go down this path again. If it wasn't your foundation, I don't think I'd be alive today.
Wow. I mean, tell me that doesn't make your day, like emotionally.
Yep. We were all in tears in the office, yeah. Just like it's sitting on my bookshelf with, you know, great photos and stuff because it means that much to me. It's the greatest feel in the world. You and I could do a $50, $100 million, $200 million business transaction. It's great. It's nice. It's the game. It's the win. We're pumped. Let's move on to the next one. This is what matters the most. I found my purpose in life through my pain.
Yeah.
Joel Osteen's a very good friend, oddly enough. I took Meltzer to meet him with Hulk. And Hulk went way back with him. And Meltzer and I laughed about it last week. It was the greatest moment of his life. He was a starstruck little kid. If he was here now, he would tell you, first time ever. And we got to have lunch with Joel and Victoria. And, you know, Joel says it, you can make your mess your message. And that's what God has done through me. Because I know it doesn't happen without him.
Yeah. So we can probably talk for 10 hours on this topic, but I'll share with you. A couple of weeks ago, I think I might have told you, I had the privilege to spend a few minutes with Richard Branson, and he's aging out, but, you know, a maverick, a billionaire. And the one question I ended with him, I know your answer because you basically just told me, but I said, you know, having accomplished what you've accomplished, created billions of dollars in value, traveled the world, done everything, what's that one thing that you would tell someone my age or younger? And he said, it's all about the legacy you leave and the lives you impact. And that's why he has his charity. And if you hire him to speak, every dollar goes to his charity and it goes to other people. Yep. And it's all about exactly that how can you leave an impact that's going to create more human beings to have a better life and bring them up and bring them from whatever depth that they're in. And I paraphrase some of it because he didn't use those exact words, but it touched me because he's the third person of his stature, not exactly his stature, but has achieved everything that you would think in a business setting, lived a life that anyone would say, oh my gosh, can I? And when you ask him the question, he's getting up there in age, so near the tail end of his life, that's what he's talking about. It really shows the true wisdom. You know, they say, you know, youth is wasted on the young and wisdom is wasted on the old. And so to impart that knowledge and that advice to me and to be able to try to do my best to help as many human beings live a better life and anything you can do, and to see you doing it at the level and scale you're doing it, it's... Inspiring is not even a big enough word. It's not a word that carries enough magnitude, but it is inspiring. It does make me want to do more. It does hopefully make everyone listening here say, how can I, at any stage, even if I don't have the Darren Prince platform and I don't have, you know, the resources, what can I do to impact someone else's life? Because we all have that capability every day.
Yeah. And especially with mental health and substance abuse, you don't need my platform. There's people in every walks of this earth, in this country, in every city, in small or large or mid-sized that are suffering with mental health issues and substance abuse. And you start locally. As long as, you know, you surrender, you realize that when you're given the gift of life, it's almost like you have an obligation to give it back. And I said it might have been on Omar's podcast or somebody's that, truthfully, but like when my time is up, I'll be 54 in a few weeks. Hopefully I'm here for another 30 years. I just want my tombstone real simple. A man that went deep through hell and came out of the other side and sprinkled hope and recovery across the world. That's it.
Hey, fitness fans, ready to crush your fitness goals? Make your move to EOS Fitness, where becoming a member starts at just $9.99 a month. Gyms are open 24/7 and packed with the latest gym equipment to keep your workouts fresh. What are you waiting for? Give them a call, drop by, or hit up jefffenster.com/EOS to join. EOS Fitness, better gym, better price. Now, let's get after those goals.
Wow. That's my legacy.
That's an amazing legacy. I'm excited to read your book.
It's a page turner. The writer did a great job. I can't take credit for it.
Well, I'm still excited.
All I did was meet her a ton of times, a lot of phone calls. You're going to really enjoy it. Yeah. Aiming high.
I'm going to devour it, and we're going to have a conversation about it. Because I told you, the second you bring it to me, I'm reading it.
Yeah.
And I know this is a tough subject for a lot of people, because whether it's personal or someone we know, we all know someone who's dealing or has dealt with addiction issues, mental health issues. Unfortunately, it's so paramount in society today that you can't not be impacted in some capacity. And, you know, I want to thank you for being as vulnerable as you are and with that mission, that tombstone mission, which is beautiful. I mean, it really is. It's, you have such clarity as to who you are, where you're going, and what your purpose is now. And it has nothing to do with the names of the athletes that everyone goes, oh my gosh, nothing. Darren gets to hang with, you know, and
nothing.
We were together at Aspire a couple of weeks back, you know, you're in with Joe and Montana in the back. Yep. And it was awesome just to see the level of relationship you can clearly see with you and all of your clients.
Yep.
You know, it is family. It's yep. not business. It's not money. It's not, hey, let me utilize your platform. Like, it's yep. all about how can we help everybody. And I mean, even to see Joe
yep.
say the same things privately in the back about talking about how he can help so many businesses and people yep. and using his platform. Like, it's just, it's infectious, yep. your approach.
Yep.
Yeah, you're making everyone around you want to be
thanks,
better.
Thanks, man. I mean, it's the only way I know. And, you know, I think they all really showed up like I never would have expected when I wrote Aiming High in 2018. Magic wrote the forward. Jeannie Buss, dear friend, Lakers owner, gave a testimonial. Kevin Harrington, Hulk, Ric Flair. I mean, there's so many people. Joe Montana and Jerry Rice. They were with a buddy of mine in Arizona. They surprised me one day. They both took a picture holding the book and posted it. And I got a message from my boy saying, Joe said aiming down, and they held the buck upside down, and they took a picture of each of them holding a copy. I mean, there's so many people, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Scottie Pippen, they just, everybody like just got behind this thing. Mark Cuban gave a testimony on the buck and said, when it comes out, let me know, DP, I want to do a nice tweet for you, because this is mm-hmm. the most important thing you'll do in your life.
It really is.
And just unbelievable. I saw Jeannie Buss a week after the book came out at the Laker game, and she always takes care of me and just gave me the biggest hug with tears rolling down her face. And she said something like, can I tell you, you know, how special you are? And I said, it's my God that's special, because none of this happens without him. I love doing the interviews too, because I said like the emotions when they come out, people need to see this.
Yeah.
Because it's enough of the embarrassment, the win, the thrill, the vibration, the elevation, the healing, the getting to that deep rooted crap that we've been ashamed of, the behavior, traumas, whether it's through our moms and our dads or upbringing, it comes out. It comes to a surface when you can get in alignment with spirituality and a power greater than yourself. And it's just the most incredible feeling in the world, because very few people at 53 that can say they found the real them, and they love every single part about who they are, who they're becoming, working through character defects, because believe me, I still got them. But I said it on Jay, it's the one thing that moved more than any quote I said on that 1 hour sit down, that I'm not exactly who I want to be, I'm not yet exactly where I want to be, but thank you God I'm not the person I used to be. Because it's a work in progress every day for every one of us.
That's heavy, but accurate.
Mm.
I mean, Darren, I'm speechless, because there's so much to process from this. And I hope everyone listening took the time to really internalize exactly what you shared, and hopefully don't have to go through hell to get the message that you're delivering.
Yeah.
That don't go so far down before you start to go up.
Yep.
And you can take and learn the lessons from someone like yourself and from that platform and what you're bringing, and to get involved into the Aiming Higher Foundation, or a foundation that touches you,
yep.
but to do something that you can to help other people. Because when you do that, you do become bigger than yourself.
Yep.
And, you know, if we all be the inspiration we want in this world, and the light and the positivity, if we all act that way, the world will be a better place for everybody, and hopefully there will be less of that outside influence, the need to fall into addictions and the need to have those suicidal thoughts or the mental health when you yep. lose hope. And so I want to thank you for coming on, man, and being so vulnerable for the audience and sharing your story, because those who probably know you only see the super agent. And if they haven't read your book, don't really understand that someone with your level of success or perception of success for them and what you've accomplished doesn't mean that your life was peaches and roses, and that there was a tough road to travel.
Yep.
And yeah, that you are continuing every day.
Thanks, man. It's beautiful the way you ended it too. I think if we could all just be kinder and in a place of service, even for your mega entrepreneurs, like, that's the key. You know, none of us are responsible for our thoughts, but we are responsible for how long we want to think those thoughts. And I think the easiest way to get out of our own head is to just help somebody else. We know plenty of people struggling and suffering in all different aspects of life, their career, their health. It is the most simple fix. And that's what's truly given me the self-esteem that I was looking for my whole life. It wasn't Ali or Frazier or Hulk or Magic or Carmen Electra or Denise Richards, any of the clients. And I love them, their family. I found it from doing esteemable acts. Mm-hmm. That's where it came from. Because I know my goal is to get to one, because you got a big audience. And we're going to get to a lot more than one when this thing airs. I can guarantee you that you're going to see a response from people that it just happens. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. You know? You are a light, and you are bringing and leaving every place you go a bit better than when you got there. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be hard to transition to the end because we do a quick rapid fire.
It's fine.
So we got to go from emotional to quick rapid fire.
It's fine. I did it with Jay too and yes. A bunch of others. So hit me with the rapid fire.
Okay. We got three questions.
Okay.
All right. What is the first step to breaking an addiction?
Willingness.
What does mental health mean to you?
Taking care of your spiritual mindset and your physical mindset.
And how can the younger generations work on their self-esteem and their self-worth?
Speak up if you feel different. Speak up if you're putting something in your system to be somebody like you're not. And just understand vulnerability and transparency will change the course of your entire life.
And I guess my final question is, for those who want to either read your book or learn more about your journey outside of the traditional social media and going to Amazon to buy the book, is there some other way that you recommend that they expose themselves to what you're trying to deliver?
They could follow me on Instagram @agent_DP or on Facebook under Darren Prince. I have my aiminghighfoundation.org website for anybody that can contribute. It would be greatly appreciated. $10, $50, whatever it might be, $100. It all helps. And we have a program now with Banyan Treatment Centers where we fly in veterans that are suffering from substance abuse and mental illness, and our foundation covers most of their flights, which is tremendous. There's 16 Banyan Treatment Center properties in America. So again, I don't even know these people, and just to have the ability, I just know that keeps me in alignment with God each and every day, most of the time. Like I said, I still got some character defects that I got to work on like all of us.
But as you said, at least you're not who you were, and you're going and heading in the direction towards the person you want to become.
Yep.
And if you're listening to this and you do struggle, don't be afraid to reach out for help. It's not a sign of weakness to ask for help. You can ask Darren, or you can get with someone locally. It is actually a sign of strength to have the self-awareness and the confidence to say, I'm not where I want to be, and I need someone to help me get there. So please don't bury it, and don't continue down a path of self-destruction. Hopefully this episode or Darren's words can help you moving towards a path so you can start to be the person you want to be. And thank you, Darren, for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me, man. We got to now figure out how we couldn't figure out how we met years before.
It's going to come.
Dan.
I know. It's going to come. Us.
And much love, Fleischman.
Yes. Much love, Fleischman.
Hey, everyone. First, I want to thank all of you for tuning in. And if you guys haven't heard about my new book, Relationship Bank Account, click the link in the show notes or search the title on Amazon. This book is packed with all my secrets to success in both relationships and life. Make sure to pick up a copy, and if the book helps you on your journey, let us know by leaving a review. I appreciate all of you and can't wait to see you on the next one.